Bite by Gardner Goldsmith. I hadn't planned on getting back in the game. I had it all mapped out. Short trip to the tax office, quick jaunt to the deposit box, a stop by the used store building, and I was off. Figures I'd slip into Honcho's to say bye to Jackie and grab a final drink at the Old Oak Bar. I don't have any medical training, but hell, can I nurse a good scotch and a thirst for a willing lady. Gotta be a single malt whiskey, though. Something with a really nice bite. I understand things that bite. And it's gotta be a special kind of woman. To be blunt, I like 'em loose. My preferred mate is a woman who's unafflicted by standards and morals. A lusty, busty gal who's housed more sailors in her berth than most battleships. Who's only interested in a good time and a one-night stand. In my line of work, you can't love good women. You're up and disappearing faster than Houdini. You don't just sever ties. You never make them. And that's for the sake of self-preservation. I didn't start out that way. I was a kid once, like everybody, with lots of fancy dreams dancing in my head. Images of landing a professorship, meeting a beautiful sweetheart, owning a nice house, maybe even writing a book someday. But even dreams stop dancing. They tire and walk off the floor, trailing all their pretty trappings behind them as reality steps in to turn on the lights and show you what life's really like. Sure, you try to keep the beat, but eventually you realize your partner's not the beauty you'd hoped, and you've got to take what you can get while she's willing. Which is why I was so unprepared for what happened at Honcho's. Jackie wasn't there when I stepped into the hazy shadows and took my regular seat at the far right corner of the bar. In fact, hardly anyone was there. It was more like an afternoon tea than a Thursday Honcho's crowd. And the glow from the Stroh's sign must have revealed my surprise, because Zeke nodded when he came over with his rag.
"Tomb tonight, Sylv," he grumbled.
You couldn't help but wince if you hadn't heard Zeke for a while. His gravelly voice sounded like a building implosion.
"Suppose it's all them arsons on the east side. Got people feeling the creepy crawlies."
"Could be," I replied. It wouldn't have served anyone's benefit to say more.
"I get you the usual?"
"Sure, Zeke. Give me two. I'd like the company." The broken smile flashed in his meaty, shaven head.
"You got it, man. More the merrier."
I watched the news on the screen above the bar, reading the captions beneath the talking heads. The sound had been turned down to make room for Bobby Darin's Mac the Knife on the stereo.
"Oh, the shark babe has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight."
Funny how songs pop up to fit the moment. I could really identify with old Mackie and his jackknife, especially while reading the report scrolling across the screen.
"Two families have been left homeless, but police say there were no injuries or fatalities."
If they only knew the truth.
"He died too soon, if you ask me,"
I started.
"What?"
Zeke's thick fingers softly set the Glenlivet on the dark, polished bar.
"Bobby Darin. Good guy. Lost a real talent when God punched his card."
I shook myself out of the fog, realizing I needed the drinks more than I'd thought. This one had been far too close. People had almost died. and there's nothing worse than knowing you've made the decision to let them die in order to carry out your task. Nothing except knowing you've done it before. Often. So far, lucky. But it could happen. And that's why I was getting out.
Hey, Sylv, you with me?
I nodded, smiled.
Yeah, yeah.
My hand quivered as I lifted the closest shot. Some scotch spilled over the rim. Here's to Bobby, Zeke. With a thumbs up, he grabbed a nearby glass of water and downed a gulp while I started a new fire in my throat. Then he faced me and pressed his palms on the counter.
You look like you need some companionship tonight, Sylvie. Sorry to say, Jackie is not in.
Too bad, Zeke. I had kind of hoped. He tilted his head to the right.
Why don't you try over there?
There was something brighter in that direction. A stark, brilliant, ivory luminescence that stood out from the drab surroundings like a polished coin on dirt. She was slim and graceful, vulnerable yet mysteriously composed. A Byzantine sculpture of delicate, uncorrupted grace and long black hair that framed eyes so dark and lovely they challenged the night. Alone at a round table some 30 feet away, she shone so profoundly that I hesitated while lowering my glass. I was struck by the incongruity of it all. A flower-print sundress and lime-green shawl, a small, expensive-looking leather purse perched neatly near her left hand, her right absently tapping the rim of a wine glass containing something golden and light as she looked toward the doors. I detected nervousness and worry, a sense of bewilderment, but determination as well. Whether she was here to meet someone or to think something through, she wasn't going to be moved. With Zeke forgotten beside me, I stared, realizing there had probably been dozens of women like her here before. Why hadn't I noticed them? Why now, with the flight from Vegas booked, did I finally see a dream sitting there, waiting? The phone rang.
I'll be back, Zeke said.
I tore my gaze away, nodded, plunked my empty shot, and watched him go.
Honchos!
When I looked back, second shot in hand, she wasn't at the table. She was walking toward me. I'll never forget those eyes, because they were locked on mine the entire way as she subtly angled her hips and turned her graceful shoulders, navigating the tables and chairs in the room like water down a stream. When she stopped within arm's reach, I could almost feel her presence. It was like encountering the charged atmosphere of a cloudy summer day, the living air that gave birth to magnificent bolts of lightning and warned of trouble ahead. She appeared less vulnerable at this angle, more serious. But if her utopian beauty was tinted in a more realistic light as she stood beside me, it still retained a core of innocence, the look of an honest woman who was stepping out of her regular routine. I assessed her, trying to calculate a smooth angle of approach. I needn't have bothered. She'd already done the math.
I need your help,
she whispered. Instantly, whatever symphony had been playing in my head screeched to a halt. She'd hit a familiar, discordant note. I downed the rest of my jet fuel before I spoke into the glass.
Think you got the wrong guy, miss.
Then I raised my empty shot, catching Zeke's attention.
Another one, buddy.
The big guy nodded and questioned the woman with a look.
You want something else to drink? I asked for him.
No, thank you, she said in a kind of staccato. Then she leaned toward me, placing one hand on the back of my seat. I'd like to say I didn't feel anything, but her proximity was palpable, like a magnet tugging through the air. Her hair held the faintest hint of lilac, and on her breath, I tasted mint. Springtime. I sat there dumbly as she drew her full red lips to within inches of me and breathed into my ear.
He doesn't know you torched that place, does he?
It wasn't a question. For all my training, for all my experiences in deadly situations where one errant breath or movement could have been my last, I actually blinked and glanced into those eyes. We have to talk, she said, and as Zeke brought the third shot, She took it and headed to her table. Pavlov was ringing his bell, so of course I followed.
Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in.